Don't bet against a better team at home. I don't care who got it.
Three massages.
Oh, this is
Say at least one more time. You can't say stuff like this on podcast, all right?
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Monday, February 8th, 2010. I'm your host, Adam Barry, and joining me today is a group that, even though they haven't actually done the podcast yet, I'm going to go ahead and say they're the greatest podcasting group of all time. We got Bobby Colobi.
How's it going? Ronald Powell does not have the fastest first step. He said I could say it.
Mike McCall.
I think you're definitely right about the greatest podcast group of all time.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Because joining us is a special guest, once again, Ed Ashaw from the Gainesville Sun.
We were the greatest, but then Lane Kiffin came in at the end and took it from us.
Nicely done, guys. Everybody got the humor.
Second place
I appreciate
is always
that.
Bad.
All right, let's go ahead and let's talk about that. This is going to be a big recruiting podcast. National Signing Day was last Wednesday. We decided to take a little bit of time, get a little bit of perspective on this whole thing, and talk about National Signing Day and the recruiting class. Ed, you mentioned it that Florida was ranked number one for most of the recruiting sites, but then Rivals number two. You want to talk about that? What happened there at the end?
Probably the best story I've ever heard out at a bar. yeah, apparently Lane Kiffin gets two late signees from two four-stars, probably guys he doesn't even need. But the funny thing is the Rivals guys are saying that it's a conspiracy, that he was waiting for everybody to anoint Florida the consensus number one, and then he just told those guys to sign late. So, yeah, USC with the number one class now. Florida no longer consensus. So they have to start all over again next year.
Yeah, this would have been the only consensus since ESPN got in the game in 2006. It's every year, Scout, Rivals, ESPN, at least one of them has been different, and sure enough, Rivals went different this year. The way it works, they have this point system where Florida had 28 commits, USC had 20. USC had five five-star players, Florida had four, and then Florida led the other categories. They had 18 to 14 in the four-star area, and then 5-1 in the three-star recruits, but the average number of stars for the USC commit, their signees, was 4.2, whereas Florida's was just a measly 3.89, and whatever complicated formula they use, USC jumped Florida.
Does anybody know the formula for the points?
Mike Farrell told me, okay, it's a very complicated mathematical process. It's like
recruiting shouldn't be mathematical.
Yeah, I know.
That's the first thing.
They take the number of commits, and then they take the average of stars per position. So Florida had, what, they had three five-stars on the defensive line, so that just ups it, and one at safety. And then it's all these four-stars, but it depends on what position ranking and everything. It's Mike Farrell couldn't even explain it all, but it's all that. You put a bunch of numbers in, you spin a wheel, and you get the outcome.
What are people going to realize? People don't like complicated math formulas in football.
Yeah.
Why is football the hub of complicated math formulas?
So Rivals is the BCS of,
pretty much.
Recruiting sites.
Yeah. And USC's the champion. Yeah.
But at the same time, you got to be different. I mean, this stuff's all based on page views, and I'm sure Rivals got a ton by putting USC number one, at the last minute.
Yeah, and despite everyone annoying in this class, possibly the best ever. Florida's is second. It's not even the best this year.
It's no longer the best. Right, so the argument's shot. No more talking.
It's not even worth talking about. But let's go ahead and talk about it anyway. What do we think of this class? Do we think it has is it going to live up to the hype? Is it worth all the hype?
I said from day one, if they couldn't get a top-notch quarterback or running back, I think Mac Brown's really good, but I don't think he's C.J. Spiller style, or he's not going to be that running back that everybody looks at and says, oh my gosh, Florida got Mac Brown.
He's no Toby Gerhart.
He's no Toby Gerhart.
He's no Adrian Peterson. But nothing like that.
Trey Burton.
Lorenzo Booker.
Trey Burton and Tyler Murphy, who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, I don't know if Trey Burton's more athletic than Tim Tebow, but Tyler Murphy is definitely the most athletic quarterback Urban Meyer's ever had. But can he throw? That's the question. He was a two-star committed to Temple, so I don't think you can really anoint him as
that
great of a quarterback. But I go back to 2006, and regardless of what Tebow, Spikes, and Harvin did, while at Florida, just getting the best linebacker, the best receiver, the
Mac Brown. We just turned on Mac Brown's highlight tape or something about him, and the first thing it says is Mac Brown, it's all downhill.
Anytime
I hope they're talking about his running style, because that's never a good thing.
Yeah, that's really foreboding.
Yeah. He was injured.
His career's all downhill.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, he was injured all year with a hamstring issue, but again, like, they just don't have They don't have the top receiver in the country. I mean, the best offensive lineman that year was Carl Johnson. I mean, again, we're not saying what he did at Florida, but they get the number one lineman, the number one linebacker, the number one receiver, and one of the top quarterbacks.
Yeah.
There's just a difference. Florida has the greatest defensive class ever. Mm-hmm. I mean, you put Ronald Powell, the fastest defensive lineman ever
so
in
athletic.
High school. You Dominic Easley, Sharif Floyd, Matt Elam, Josh Shaw. I mean, they're just loaded on defense. So yeah. I say the greatest defensive class ever.
I somewhat agree that this is extremely impressive in the class. And possibly could be the best class. You never know what they're going to do. But they're bringing in just so much talent and so much depth at a lot of positions that this could end up being the best class, but without a marquee name, without someone to be the face of that class. Because as great as Ronald Powell is, and though he's the number one, he's still not really that marquee guy. Mm-hmm. And Tim Tebow, even though he wasn't the top recruit that year, he wasn't even the top quarterback that year, he was the person that everyone was looking to that year. Mm-hmm. So where was he going to go?
Yeah.
Everyone was obsessed with Tim Tebow, even before he got there, and despite him not being the top guy. And he went to Florida, and he was the face of that class for the next 4 years. I don't see right now anyone who can be the face of that class leading the charge. You can be like, look how good that one guy did, and then everyone else contributed. You know, so I think unless one of them steps up, if Ronald Powell ended up being the greatest defensive end that ever played at Florida, mm-hmm. maybe. But
offense is sexy.
Exactly. It is. Absolutely is.
Yeah, when you get the greatest defensive recruiting class of all time, even if those guys are great, if they win a national championship, it doesn't matter because you can't point to it. Be like that quarterback led mm-hmm. and that running back because Mac Brown, like you said.
Even 2004's class has gotten all – 2002 maybe? Which one had Chris Leak?
Oh, 2000
Yeah.
That would have been 2002.
All right. That class got a lot of attention later on. It didn't get a lot of – like it was up towards the top in most of them. And then that class, everyone in that class pretty much did something. And then you still had Leak to point to as, look how good he did.
Well, they had Andre Caldwell's. They had the top receiver.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was 2003. Then.
2003, all right. So they had a lot of Reggie Nelson.
They also had two-star cornerback Johnny Dingle.
Yeah. The thing was, Chris Leak wasn't that good of a recruit, but the whole statement.
At one point, he was the number one recruit in the country.
I think he dropped
at the end. But he was the number one.
The big thing he got known for was the All-American Bowl, mm-hmm. saying, like, we're going to win championships. Like, if you want to win, you come with me to Florida. And I just started – he pretty much did what – with effect. You know, like, Tebow also kind of brought him in classes. And everyone's able to point to that class. And look at all the names they've got. Look at what they all did. They all, like, most of them contributed and played major roles.
Johnny
Dingle, I'm
sorry.
Yeah.
D-Webb was the best
player. I mean, that's one of the reasons that one also gets known as a really good recruiting class. It's because of how much everyone in the class, as a whole, the class did really well. There's a lot of people who actually panned out, which is always important.
Mm. We talk about the guy bringing everybody else in. In this class, it was Trey Burton, more or less. And
yeah.
He's going to be known for that. He's not going to be known for being the greatest quarterback.
No.
We've talked about that
before. I stick to he's got it. Just watching his throw in motion, you can't play quarterback with that throw in motion. Yeah, I mean... it'll be really. I mean, it's someone impressive that can throw the ball that well, shot putting it. But it's not going to translate to the next level.
I think we talked about this earlier. If you could combine Tebow and Trey Burton's like throwing motions, you'd have
Trey Burton's is a really short, way too short. Can't get it all. Obviously isn't going to get enough on it. And Tebow's is extremely elongated. If you kind of get in between that two, you've got a good throwing motion.
Yeah, Trey Burton has no windup. Tebow's windup takes
doesn't
like
go
5 seconds.
Past his shoulder.
Yeah, you're supposed to bring the ball to your ear, and I'm not sure if he ever gets the ball to his face mask. It's somewhat impressive.
I will say this about Trey Burton. He's a phenomenal athlete. I
mean, absolutely.
He was a track star in high school. I think if he and Scott Leffler get together and Scott Leffler can fix his throwing, then he could really be a pretty decent quarterback.
I think,
he's got pretty good size right now.
Yeah, I think next year Trey Burton and maybe even Tyler Murphy. I think Tyler Murphy is going to be the first to switch positions. Trey Burton, I think it's just they're going to have to really
–
There's
just not enough depth right now.
Yeah, they're both going to have to play quarterback. I think – Murphy splits time next year already. He's already taken some time at quarterback and is already starting to transition to wide receiver, most likely, I'd assume. And Trey Burton's going to be the backup. And he might even see some time on the field as Tebow did his freshman year, where they bring him in to run the ball since Brantley's not a huge runner, even though people are saying, Brantley's better running than you think. He's still not good.
No, yeah.
So I think Trey Burton might see time on the field as that running quarterback.
Yeah, well, the thing is they don't have another guy.
Yeah.
Jordan Reed's already been moved, so Will Hill would be the next best quarterback. In all honesty, he was a great quarterback in high school, but I think that
You meant Chaz Henry.
Yeah, I think Chaz.
No, I didn't mean Chaz.
You meant Chaz Henry.
No,
state championship.
Definitely meant Will Hill. But the thing is Trey's got to be ready because Brantley can't take the hits that Tebow did. I mean, there's no way that he could take a concussion to John Brantley compared to Tim Tebow.
Well, besides that one hit, Brantley's going to avoid those big hits for the most part. He's not going to go looking for the big hits like Tebow did.
He's not going to take
hits. Oh, yeah, I mean, he's got to take hits, obviously. Yeah. But, yeah, one hit and he's out. Then all of a sudden, Trey Burns is starting quarterback, and that's a really scary thought for Florida.
I think that both of them play. There's going to be a lot more Wildcat. They have to.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever they said about Joe Hayden last year.
They're going to have to find somebody.
They have to get somebody in there to change the pace for John Brantley.
Right. All right, let's talk a little bit more about some specific players. Start with Ronald Powell, since we were just arguing about him before the show. Ed, I think you and I are roughly on the same page.
We're roughly on the same page with everyone in America.
In that we love Ronald Powell.
And that he's the greatest high school player I've ever seen live. I'll just say, I saw him live. He's amazing.
I'm just saying, on his tape, Bob, his first step. No. I'm not saying he's not great. He's amazing. And, like, his use of his hands for a high school player is really incredible. Because he can get off blocks without any. Like, he doesn't let people get to his body, which is really impressive. Most high school players don't learn that. They just, for most part, great defensive ends in high school just run right past everyone. But he's able to, even if a block gets to him, he's able to get him off him real quick. But his first step is not as fast as some people have seen. One in particular in this class is Dominic Easley. Dominic Easley has a faster first step. He's not as good as Ronald Powell because he still hasn't learned to use his hands as well. But he's got a. It's almost like Dominic Easley knows the snap count every single play. So unless the other team is, you know, kind of working with him to make him look better and tell him, hey, this one's on two, you know, he's jumping. There was one play where he jumped the snap, got back onside, and still was the first one across the line. He's got a very explosive first step, and Ronald Powell just uses hands very well, never lets anyone get into him, so even if someone's got him engaged, at any point in time, he can throw him off of him and shed the block and
also
make the tackle.
Staten Island Town.
Say that. fine.
And that's one thing that you have to remember with all these kids. You have to temper what you're seeing with who they're playing.
Well, but what Dominic Easley's impressed me is not what he's doing after the play. It's what he's doing for that first step. And it doesn't matter who you're playing. If you have a fast first step, you still have a fast first step. There's certain things.
Right, he played that, really well in the All American.
Yeah, well, he played in the Under Armour one and was the. Yeah, no.
I will say this about Powell and the Army game. All I know is that the best offensive tackle in the last 12 years, Chantrell Henderson just looked like nothing. He sped right past
him. He also does a very good job of keeping his shoulders down.
In other words, he's awesome, but
you're finding flaws. That's the one thing I could say about him is that his first step is not as fast as other people. But after that first step, he's faster than Dominic Easley, much faster, and he uses his hands better than almost anyone I've ever seen.
How do we feel about his chances of playing on offense? We're watching a highlight of him mauling people on both sides of the ball.
Yeah,
he said on signing day that they want him to play goal line tight end.
Okay. I mean, Urban Meyer said that Justin Trout did that, right?
So
Justin Trout on Ronald Powell.
Urban Meyer said the words. Ronald Powell will catch balls at Florida. I mean, Urban Meyer's lied in the past. So I don't usually believe anything he says, but Ronald Powell is extremely talented on both sides of the ball. And, I mean, there's one offensive play where you wouldn't even guess that he plays defensive end just because of how well he was moving with the ball.
Ronald Powell, if you're listening, Bobby Colovey called you out and said you're slow.
Yeah. I didn't
slow off the line. Slow. He said you're slow.
You're the slowest person I've ever seen, Ronald Powell. Prove me wrong.
Right. Without yelling, Bobby.
That's impossible.
Because you're blowing out car speakers all across the Southeast.
That's good. We get complaints that we're too quiet.
Yeah, so this will be good for us. You're very passionate, clearly, about defensive line recruits. And you wrote a column last week about your fatty theory.
My big fatties.
Big fatties, yeah.
So, as quietly as you can, let's discuss your fatty theory.
You've done this on the air before.
Oh, you did?
And, and I'll say it again. Anyone who comes in over 300 pounds, I'm very skeptical of, just because of how easily they can just move people around without any effort. In high school, they're 300 pounds. Everyone else is probably under 250 playing offensive line. And, I mean, he's got a 50-pound advantage and can just throw people around. Leon Orr and Sharif Floyd are both the ones over 300 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And Sharif Floyd, like they say, he's got a good first step. But they've said that plenty of times in the past about big defensive tackles, and they just don't pan out. And what he does that worries me is he just throws blockers wherever he wants. Which is no, but that's the problem is he can't do that. He's not going to be able to do that in the next level. He's going to have to be able to have more technique and have to beat them with other things than just throwing them around.
I mean,
I'm not saying he's doomed from the get-go. I'm just saying that history in the past has proved that these big defensive tackles don't always pan out. And a lot of times, they never come close because they spend 2-3 years trying to get in shape, trying to figure out their technique. And then by the time they do, other people have kind of passed them at their position, and now they have to battle some more. I'm not saying that Sharif Floyd falls in this category immediately, but in the past, these type of players haven't always panned out. Sharif Floyd looks good on film, but like I said, he throws people around, which is what which concerns me, just because you can't do that in college.
It's like Omar Hunter.
Yeah. Okay. But I mean, Omar Hunter's starting to pan out, but still, this is like Urban Meyer, you know, like the Tim Tebow of the class, and he's going to be the greatest defensive tackle ever, and he's been here 2 years and just started developing last year into a good defensive tackle.
Well, he did have a back injury.
But he's... He still wasn't, they still said he was overweight, he needed to get in shape. And Sharif Floyd's probably going to have to do the same thing. They're going to say he's overweight, he needs to get down. And that's that's the only thing. I'm not saying Sharif Floyd isn't any good and will never be good, but it's just, I have to be skeptical with these big guys just because of what's happened in the past.
Well, I think it might be different, though, now. Urban will say, all right, you have to stay on the strict diet.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, they have to, but
he's pretty athletic. From what I've seen of him, he's pretty athletic. No, I understand the throwing guys out of the way, but if you can do that, if that's easy, then why not?
No, I mean, that's the problem.
I don't think that teaching the technique to a guy like him is going to be as different or as difficult as you think.
Well, the problem is that they learn that. So in high school, when other guys are learning how to beat guys without, you know, just throw him out of the way, he doesn't get to do that because he can't throw him out of the way. And that's all he has to do. He knows his goal isn't to, like, learn technique in high school and be, like, ready for the next level. It's to be the best defensive tackle he can. And being the best defensive tackle for him is picking up a guy and just chucking him. So, that just makes – it just makes it harder for him to learn technique and puts him at, like, a little bit – he puts him behind other players.
This is the theory about how attractive guys or girls don't develop personality when they're younger because they don't need it. So something you have that's an asset – hurts you in the sense that you don't develop something else you need.
Right.
So basically, Leon Orr and Sharif Floyd might get here and not have a personality. But I mean,
that's two relationship comparisons in the last two podcasts from you. Nice work.
I'm getting deep. Leon Orr, is he really 344 pounds? And B, was he an effective tight end in high school? I've
not seen any tape of him playing tight end.
He's like one touchdown as a tight end.
It's probably like he played tight end, and it was like he came in the goal line situation and like blocked. Yeah. I said, I haven't seen him play, but like that could be it for all I know. And it's just, you know, I don't know. It's just one of those things where I would like to see him play more tight end and more often. I'm always concerned when someone says they're playing, you know, a Leon Orr interception. We're bringing up film.
Leon Orr is a guy who could also play offensive line.
Yeah, that right. might.
And they did. They only got two guys. So.
Woo! Okay, what we just watched was Leon Orr.
He's very humongous.
Yeah, he's
we
a large
guy. We just
watched
him bull rush a tackle, leap in the air, deflect a pass in the air, and then dive and pick it off. This dude's 300-something pounds.
He's certainly athletic enough to
That's
to get
impressive.
In there.
But you do wonder, I mean, the guy broke his leg toward the end of his high school career. I think that's why he didn't play in any of the postseason games.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're carrying that much weight, and you got a broken leg. I don't know. He's going to have to get that taken care of well. If you're carrying that much weight, you can't have any structural issues.
Yeah.
Well, this is another thing I'd like to ask about see what you guys think about this. I mean, Florida's identity since Urban Meyer got here, obviously, has been offense. But... you know, the 2016 was known for its defense. 2018 probably wasn't known for its defense because they had Tebow and Harvin. But, I mean, that was an incredible defense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you look at the class they just brought in, might be one of the best defensive classes of all time.
I mean, even last season it was all defense.
Right.
Like, the offense did not look good most of the year.
Tebow's not here. Harvin's not here. The identity of this team is kind of up for grabs in the next couple of years. Is Florida moving toward being... I mean, obviously they're still going to run an exciting kind of offense. They're going to be known for that. Like moving toward being more of a defensive program?
It could be more balanced now.
Yeah.
I think it'll take a year for the offense to kind of get back. I mean, the receivers, they lose two seniors, receiver. No one else is really proven.
Yeah.
Deontay Thompson is supposed to be the guy that
he's shown moments where you like, wow, Deontay Thompson is something really good. And then you watch him later, and it's like, what were you doing right there? Like, how did you not catch that ball? So it's kind of like he could be good. You see the moments where it's like, that's why they're saying he's good. And then there's other times where it's just not impressive.
Okay, Leon Orr averaged 21.5 yards per catch in high school. I strongly recommend that if you've got access to the internet, You go look up the YouTube video titled Leon Orr Highlight Gulf Coast or Gulf High School.
Right.
And watch this. He's got leaping catches. He's crushing
blocks.
He's running.
He's taking it 4.940. That's faster than McCall.
It is. Much faster than McCall.
This is not fair at all.
He just jukes his
He's got spin moves. This is gross. All
right, you guys need to watch this video. This is disgusting.
We're really just feeding the recruiting hype here. Just like, watching
Florida.
YouTube videos.
This is in Florida. I don't know if Gulf High plays good teams, but
yeah.
This is...
Judging by number 21 chasing him, I'm going to say, and 32, that the teams he's playing are not very big guys. At least that team isn't.
Bottom line, this kid is a freak.
Dude.
He's running out he's running receiver routes right now.
Are people confusing him for an offensive tackle? Because it's seemingly no one covers him ever.
That's
the one thing I've noticed. He has not made a catch. I'm not saying like he's never going to be a tight end. But that was an impressive catch. That was a damn impressive catch. But no, it's almost. But every single catch, he's been wide open. Do people like, oh, that's an offensive tackle. We don't need to cover him.
He's a great route runner.
He's so shifty.
Apparently.
He knows how to get open.
Yeah, it's just. Apparently no one wants to cover the big fatty.
Well, let's talk about a little bit about somebody who will be running routes. That's Chris Dunkley. What's your take on him?
I think Dunkley was the main guy that they wanted on offense this year. I mean, they needed that big playmaker receiver. And he might not be Andre DeBose or who Andre DeBose was in high school, but he's definitely the guy I think is going to make the biggest impact on offense.
I just want to point out right now that he is not playing for Pokey, like he says he does. He played for Royal Palm for most of his life, so he's not one of the Muck Boys. Don't get him confused.
He played for a year.
Yeah, I know, bud.
How much does he see the field this year, do you think?
I think he's going to be one of those guys that gets in a lot. The way he looked over the summer, he looked like he was playing college football.
Yeah.
I mean, he's so good. He runs his routes very well. You know, he's got great hands. He's really shifty. He's really fast. I think that, you know, DeBose might be a guy that they use more as like a Percy player running the ball. Catching the ball, but with Dunkley, he's going to be a pure route runner, and I think that he and I also like Solomon Patton to see the field a lot. He might be short, but he is so fast. And I talked to a couple guys who were covering him at the Mississippi Alabama game, and he just 50-yard touchdown first play, just send him. I mean, height doesn't matter with him. He is fast enough to get plays to make plays in the SEC.
I'm also a really big fan of Solomon Patton,
and he's a great player.
I just think there is no. There's just like that. No one's established himself as a receiver, so anyone who's playing receiver next year has a chance to see the field, and they just got to prove it. I mean, Solomon Patton and Chris Dunkley both have a chance, just because there is no one. I mean, Deontay's the only one with significant playing time. Amaris Hines looked good in the small amount of playing time that he actually saw in the small amount of catches he actually like got balls he got thrown to him.
Really?
But he looked good. He looked strong. He looked really strong, just carrying people with him. But I mean, one, it was against last year competition when he got a play, and you know he just didn't get many chances to show that he can be consistent about it. But Andre DeBose is coming off a hamstring, so you don't even know how fast or how explosive he's going to be again after that type of injury. Deontay Thompson, we already talked about with him being pretty inconsistent. And TJ Lawrence,
Frankie
Hammond. But neither have shown anything.
Well, yeah.
So they've.
But that's just stubborn offensive play calling.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, they're not even. Like, they were barely. Even, when they did get on the field, it was almost guaranteed it was a run play.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean.
Freshmen are in running.
It was stubborn play calling. It was Tebow always locking in on Aaron Hernandez and Riley Cooper. So they never really got a chance to prove anything, but they still didn't prove anything, which is kind of has made this an open battle that anyone who's playing wide receiver has a chance to do something. I mean, there's also Stephen Ali. He's an attractive
he's
looking.
Yeah,
he's a project.
He's
which
attractive
he,
looking.
Yeah.
When you're 6'6" and you run a 4.40.
Yeah.
4.40.
Yeah,
I can't help but notice, or maybe I was just zoned out that no one's mentioned Carl Moore yet.
Carl Moore, the intended receiver,
is going to be the best receiver on the team next year. I'm standing by.
He'll
wave that towel. So I think he looked really good
last spring, and then
Moore's going to get a lot of passes.
I will
thrown
say
his
this
way.
Though about Carl Moore, he's not the receiver
they thought he was going to be.
No, and regardless of the injury, they brought him in to be an Andre Caldwell type player, and that's what Meyer said. But he doesn't. He doesn't scream, big play.
This is
he's a possession guy, and I mean, they're going to need that in the offense.
This is one of the things that kind of surprised me, is that he was listed, I think, like 6'4", at his junior college. And they kind of hyped him up as this tall, fast receiver.
He was like an animal. He was just beasting
everywhere. Yeah, and he came in well under 6'4". I want to say he's, what, 6'2", right?
He shrunk?
Did they like? Did no one go see him and be like, "Oh, that guy is not 6'4"? Ooh, Palm Beach Central. Sorry, that was alma mater. Well, my school's a rival. Hmm. Yeah, I don't know why they just showed that. They just showed him. Not catching a ball.
Chris Dunkley.
Yeah, Chris Dunkley. Yeah, Chris Dunkley. So
we're still watching tape. It's like a bad Sports Center thing where we're talking about these guys in the background and showing highlights, but nobody else can see the highlights. It's just us watching them.
Which is why I said we need a live broadcast of us actually
podcasting. Need to do, we need to put out a list of what we watch at different points in this podcast so you guys can play along at home.
Yeah, that would actually be fun if people are sitting at their computers listening to this.
Let me see what you guys think. Pick one guy who you think is going to have an immediate impact. I'm going to go first since I'm not taking either one of yours. Gerald Christian, tight end. I'm going to take him because they don't really have anyone at tight end.
He probably needs to put on a little bit of weight, but he kind of seems to fit a little bit into the CI mold where he's not a really big guy, but he's very athletic and can play the tight end that they've kind of infused into the offense where it's kind of a little bit away from the line, not too much blocking. And I think he can really be a big option in the passing game, which is probably – so I think Brantley's probably going to use his tight end a lot more than Tebow did before Aaron Hernandez. I mean, Aaron Hernandez last season, although Aaron Hernandez pretty much came out wide out, but I think just, like, the tight end in particular is going to be –
plus, he's already on campus, Gerald. Yeah, he'll be here for spring ball, which is huge. Yeah. It's really, really crucial.
He's going up against Jordan Reed and Dez Parks, Dez Parks looked lost most of last season.
No, he actually did well in the spring. It was until he couldn't gain weight or whatever reason Meyer said that he wasn't ready to play. I think Desmond Parks, when he was in high school, I wasn't sold on him. Mm. But he looked a lot bigger, and he looked pretty good in the spring. He had Aaron there. But now he's having to teach Gerald Christian. I think Gerald Christian might be teaching him. Yeah. I like that pick of Gerald Christian.
All right, I'll take it next just because I had the least knowledge and I have a guy that I don't want to get stolen. I'm going to go Josh Shaw.
Dang it.
Yeah. I love Josh Shaw. He's from Palmdale.
Yeah. We all love Josh Shaw.
Yeah, I didn't want to get him taken because I need both of you find it done.
For my column today, I predicted the 2010 depth chart, and I had him starting at cornerback opposite of Janoris Jenkins. Jeremy Brown's often injured.
He's close.
He's getting closer, we've heard. Then there's Adrian Bouchel, who's Ed's boy. Ed loves himself some Adrian, but I think he even predicts Josh Shaw will start.
I do.
So that kind of says how much he's hanging on to.
Still
his
my
hopes.
Boy, Adrian. You're still my boy. I don't know. Josh Shaw is so good.
Yeah.
My guy is gonna be the opposite of Ed probably, and I'm gonna go with Dominic Easley. I see him as he's just too fast. But he can do a lot of different things. But he might
be
play
tackle. Inside or outside.
Whichever one they want.
If he plays defensive tackle, he'll play over Sharif Floyd.
Yeah, I think he's going to come in at about 275 or so, and he's going to be right where they want him as a defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dominic Easley told me he's coming in at 280.
Oh, look at that! Oh, yeah, even better. There you go. Let me go. He's one better than I even thought he is.
I mean, I'm going to go with Ronald Powell because he's the best player in the country. And it's just that easy. But the thing about Ronald Powell is they lose Jermaine Cunningham. They lose Carlos Dunlap. They're going to need someone out there. Justin Traddow's probably cemented his spot. Yeah. But they like to rotate a lot. Mm-hmm. And this guy is a guy who I think could just come in and play now. Mm-hmm. I mean, he bulked up a lot during the fall. He looked like a smaller Jermaine Cunningham over the summer who could run routes and beat safeties and corners when playing tight end, and then beat guys. I saw him beat a 6'7", 300-pound kid from North Carolina who was just dominating guys, just got right around him. Then he comes in this fall and dominates Chantrell Henderson on the biggest stage for high school football. So enough said right there, but I think that the depth, I like Duke Lemons as a player. I think he's one of those guys that's going to work hard.
He dresses well.
He wears those Mohawks well as well.
But his suits before games, always keeping it fresh.
Lavender suit.
Yeah. Lime green ones, too.
He's not. He doesn't have the athletic talent that Ronald Powell does. Right. William Green's a guy who's going to be really good. I guess they're not going to be in the 3-4.
I was going to throw that out there. But, not
even if they did 3-4, he's an outside linebacker.
No, absolutely. Ronald Powell, that's where I was saying.
Linebacker to 4-3.
That's where our boy Sharif Floyd might come in handy, is if they do go to a 3-4, you need a big fatty. Someone who's not going to do much is just going to sit there and take up.
Sharif Floyd,
take,
I hope you're listening. He's going to just take up.
After my column, there's no hope for me and Floyd's relationship. So I'm just going to completely cut the ties with him.
I think for Ronald Powell's prediction on starting, it's going to be tough with William Green there because I think he's very athletic. I think he's better than a lot of people thought.
No, I agree.
But I think he's going to get the most playing time of any freshman.
And he is at
Well, outside of maybe Josh Off, he starts.
Okay. He is at two positions that are in need of playmakers, tight end and defensive end. So he's got a very good chance of seeing the field in some fashion. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of how quickly. I mean, tight end seems like it's going to take more time just to learn the
offense. That offense is not easy to learn.
Yeah, so I guess he's got a better shot since he's not going to be here in the spring of picking up defensive end quickly.
Right.
He should just play quarterback.
Yeah.
There you go.
Put the ball in his hand.
Yeah,
there,
no.
Play.
If they run 3-4,
he's already number 7.
It really helps the bigger defensive tackles because all you need that nose guard to do is just take up room.
Although they did play Trattow at the 3-4.
Well, they played him at the 3-3, which was a pass rushing thing.
Yeah.
It's where you just want all your best pass rushers on the field. But 3-4, I mean, why can't I think of his name? Alabama's Cody.
Terrence Cody.
He's what you want in your 3-4 nose guard. Someone who's going to take up at least two offensive tackles, or I mean offensive linemen, preferably three if he could. And you just want the biggest guy you've got to stand there and just not get moved, pretty much. And that's what these guys can do, is they just get there, get low, and just hold their ground and let the linebackers make plays, which is what the 3-4 is all about.
Let me ask, what do you guys think about Lyndon Trail? He's a defensive end, 6'7", 220 pounds. He needs to put on some weight, but the 6'7" thing is
Lyndon Trail, even if he never plays, is going to be a fan and media favorite. Yeah. He's the best quote ever. You know, he'll call you when he's just riding with his friends, and you can hear them clowning in the background, and he'll clown with them, and I guess you can clown with them as well. he's on speakerphone.
Put on speaker,
he's the greatest quote ever.
He's
of
the
any
one
high
that said,
and
we did a feature on for Booker T, and he's the one that said, like, Miami swag is the best type of swag you can have. You know, like, we're like good and serious, and we're also like clowns or something of that sort. It was a really good quote as well. Like that, just kind of going with what you said. He's gonna be great on. What I'm going to say right now is they'll use him this year on pump block. They love those really tall. William Green also did it his freshman year. I see him probably doing that. He's a pretty fast guy, really tall, can obviously use that ability to block punts. I see them using him immediately on their pump block.
Yeah, I think he'll make his impact on special teams before he does on defense. And it's not because he's not good, but he's not as athletic as Ronald Powell. And, you know, if Easley plays outside, I don't think he could beat him out either. But he's a fast guy. He's one of those guys that's going to get off the line fast. So you'll see him in some capacity, but I don't think he'll make the impact that those other guys do.
How about a guy of each of you that you think won't pan out?
Yeah,
you can't really pick sleepers in this class. Everyone is pretty good.
Robert Clark, my sleeper.
Oh, yeah, if you're going to take one of the two or
three
Tyler
Murphy
guys, maybe. But who's somebody you don't think will pan out?
I will say, and this has nothing to do with his ability, but it's just – he's 5'8", or 5'9". Cody Riggs playing corner in the SEC.
Yeah.
I wrote a blog about it, Gatorsports.com, scout leader.
Whoa.
But the problem is he's 5'9". That's just so tough. I can understand guys like Joe Hayden was a generous 5'11". You know, Janoris Jenkins is maybe a little bit taller than him, but 5'9", and he's only 158 pounds.
Yeah,
I'm 5'8", 160 pounds. So maybe I might have a chance, you know.
Yeah.
He's fast. He's so athletic. I mean, I've seen tape and I've seen him play. He's a really athletic guy, but I think the height is going to get him. So if I had to go with the most overrated guy, I'd go with Cody Riggs.
I'm just going to go with this one, mainly because I don't see him being as great as his brother. I'm going Jordan Hayden.
Nice.
I just think he's coming in with being one of the talented defensive backs. And he's also got to live up to his brother's, hype. So I just don't see it happening, especially with such a crowded secondary coming in. I just don't think he's going to really pan out, at least not the next 2 years. And I just think he's not going to really live up to being Joe Hayden.
Yeah, I think the problem that he has is he's kind of a tweener.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be really athletic. I mean, his dad says all the time that he probably has the most potential. But no one is going to beat Joe Hayden in that family for athleticism.
Right.
He's just an amazing athlete. But the problem that Jordan has is he might be a step too slow to play safety.
Yeah.
And not big enough to play linebacker. So how do you, the way they mold him this spring and this summer is going to be really important. Because he could play both in high school. I don't know what he could play in college.
Right. Yeah. Being 6 foot really hurts him at linebacker. Because, mm-hmm. one, he's fast. So your immediate thought would be put him on the strong side, make him, you know, that coverage guy. But 6 foot, he's going to be mostly covering tight ends. And tight ends are going to have a big height advantage, mm-hmm. on him. So that's going to hurt him. And then you slide him over to the weak side, and he's going to have to put on about 40 pounds before, mm-hmm. he can play weak side.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really kind of puts him in limbo of where he plays. He's either going to have to work on speed so he can play safety, but even then there's so many other safeties that kind of puts him at a disadvantage.
All right, I'm going to take a guy who I actually like, but I think just the circumstance doesn't work out well for him at this point. I'm going to say Mack Brown does not pan out at Florida. I think he might pan out somewhere else.
As much as I don't want Mack Brown to be good because of all of that drama stuff, I hate the people who do that. Although I also kind of like it somewhat. I like
to a certain. Well,
no. It's like I like the funness
like the drama, but he
of
likes
it.
The chase.
I like the funness of recruiting and the ridiculous amount of craziness that happens. But his was a little too ridiculous for me and upset me a little bit.
Well, Homer over here.
Well, no.
What did he do?
I just no. It's not even that. I don't care.
He never made those visits.
Why commit to FSU? That's the one thing that upset me. Why commit?
He didn't commit to FSU.
He did. Mack he put
Brown?
On a hat. No, wait. Oh, sorry. Why?
I said Mack Brown.
Somehow I was.
Mack Brown?
You're never mind.
About
Elam.
Is that
I was on Elam. I was on Elam. That's my fault.
That was actually going to be the next thing I brought up. Was what do you guys think about Matt Elam?
Well, I just let out my entire emotions about Matt Elam on Mack Brown.
Let's talk more football stuff.
Wait, did you go with your.
Yeah, you didn't pick one.
You didn't pick one.
Yeah, that's because I kind of didn't have one.
All right.
Well, that's
Jordan,
why you started.
Jordan would have been mine because I feel the same way. That he's kind of walking into a loaded position. He doesn't have a perfect
skill
set.
Take Sharif Floyd.
And he's
got
to live up to the Hayden name. I don't know. I feel all right. Fine. I'll take Sharif Floyd. Here's the thing. Like
I get two.
These guys don't all pan out because I mean, remember a couple of years ago when John Brown and Torrey Davis came in, they're like number one and
two
defensive tackles. That was a huge deal. It was like best D-line class ever because Carlos Dunlap was also in that. So were Tradow and Duke Lemons.
Ooh,
that was a pretty loaded defensive line class. I mean, these guys aren't going to all be studs. It's just not going to happen. Somebody's got to go. I'll go ahead and say Sharif Floyd. Although, he's the one. I mean, God told Urban he's going to be coaching.
Right.
Okay.
He's gonna be one of the best.
I actually met that guy that wrote that.
Really?
Yeah.
You trust him?
No.
Okay.
Whatever.
All right. So, but what do you guys think of Matt Elam on the football field? Meyer mentioned something on signing day about how he'd still try and get him the ball in like a wildcat setting occasionally, but we heard that with Joe Hayden, so
right.
I'm gonna call bull on that. But what do you think about his chance for getting on the field this year?
Well, I think Matt Elam is probably one of the most athletic guys I've seen on defense in a while, but the problem is he's kind of undersized too. So he would be a great safety. It's just, is that size going to really bother him that much? I mean, the same thing happened with Ahmad Black. I mean, he's tiny and.
Yeah.
One of the best safeties in the SEC the last couple of years. I think he's more athletic than Ahmad Black, and he just has a – I don't know if his defensive sense might be there because he played a lot of offense as well. He could be a running back. He's just so athletic that I think no matter where you put him, he's going to excel. And I think they should keep him on defense. It's kind of tough. I could see a corner playing receiver and even a corner doing some wildcat, but I don't see a safety being able to take that the punishment of being a running back – and then try to go out there and play safety and stop running backs. So I say that I don't know if he'll start this year because you still have Will Hill.
Yeah.
I mean, you still have Ahmad Black. I mean, Dorian Monroe is still on the roster.
That's right.
Yeah.
About
so,
Demo.
Wow.
He'll eventually get to play something. I don't know what he'll do.
Yeah, so,
he'll get on the field.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to play. So where will Matt Elam go? I mean, he's probably more athletic than Dorian Monroe is right now. So.
Especially after the knees.
Yeah, so I think he's going to play, and I think he's going to be a really outstanding player for Florida, especially on
defense.
Yeah. If he stays only on defense.
Yeah, I wanted to apologize to Mack Brown. I was just so focused on bashing Matt Elam that I just heard the next name, and it would start with an mm.
We're talking about the football field.
It started with an mm, and I was ready to attack Matt Elam. But as I was saying, as much as I don't want him to be good, he looks so good that I can't see him not ending up playing well when he gets to Florida.
All right, one thing possibly related to this greatest defensive recruiting class of all time, Florida just got rid of its defensive coordinator after a glorious. How long was the? How long was his tenure at Florida?
About a month, maybe even that.
3 weeks,
January
8th, maybe.
Left February 4th.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There you go. George Edwards took the defensive coordinator job with the Buffalo Bills after a short run with Florida. How does this affect? How does this affect everything going on with this recruiting class going into next year?
I don't think it does anything for recruiting. None of the kids really talked to him. Huh. Lyndon Trail even said that he wasn't as lively or, you know, as intense as the Florida coaches anyway. He didn't think he fit in that well to begin with. And I don't think that they gave him that much responsibility in recruiting. He probably visited a couple guys, Jordan Hicks, Christian Jones, guys like that. But it was never that big of a deal. I mean, losing him now, I think it sucks for him because Meyer was really excited. And from what I've been told, it was not a big, you know, it wasn't that he hired him and knew he was going to leave and then waited till signing day. Meyer was really upset about this. Like, from what I was told, he was not expecting this. And I guess word came out that he was possibly going to talk to him Monday before signing day. So nothing was official. And then I guess Chan Gailey officially called him Wednesday. So at first it was kind of shady looking, but apparently it was more shady on Edwards' part than Myers.
Right. How does this affect the team going forward? Because now interim head coach Steve Addazio has to head up the search for a new defensive coordinator. I just wanted to say that, really. Yeah.
Well, what we came to, I think everyone who was in New Orleans at this media opportunity came away with the same thing. They brought out Chuck Heater and Dan McCarney to be interviewed the same day, and this is when Florida was still looking for a defensive coordinator. McCarney said he wasn't interested. He didn't want it. And I've always known Dan McCarney to be an honest man, so I'll take his word for it. And Chuck Heater said, I don't even remember exactly what he said, but he didn't
wanted
say
to be a leadership role.
But when we walked away, we all were like, he wants that job bad. Yeah. Like you could just see it in his eyes. Chuck Heater wants that job, and I think for them to pass him over twice would be, I mean, that would really suck for him. Somebody who's been here a while, been with his coaching staff a while, so. I would think that would be the first option. But then again, if he was going to be the first option, they probably would have gone ahead and done it.
I think that they want to do co-coordinator, just so Chuck Heater can still work with the secondary. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a knock on him being the defensive coordinator, but when you're the defensive coordinator, if that's your sole job, then you don't have time to work with the safeties as much or the corners. Yeah. I mean, how many times do we see Charlie Strong working with Janoris Jenkins? I mean, they might celebrate together on the field, but...
Well, he did work with Spikes a lot, right? I mean, he was...
Well, yeah, but I don't see Chuck Heater doing that if he's working there. So I think what they'd like to do is bring in another guy, because regardless, they're going to have to hire someone else.
Yeah.
And I think they want to keep Heater with the corners and the safeties and then make him co-coordinator so that he can have a lot of input on what they run and stuff. But I don't know. I've really... Who knows who they could bring in?
So Florida had a brief...
John Thompson, maybe?
Please, not John Thompson. The man who ruined ECU.
I thought you'd like that.
I think they really like the idea of a 3-4, of at least having that as one of their wrinkles on their defense, and bringing in someone who's very familiar with the 3-4, because I don't think anyone who's on this coaching staff has... They probably, everyone kind of knows 3-4, but they don't have in-depth knowledge of it.
Yeah,
but I think they would kind of like to bring in someone like that. I mean, I don't think they're going to limit their search to only people who have 3-4. Like, if they throw out the job, they're not going to put, as one of the requirements, knowledge of the 3-4. But I think that they still kind of would like to have someone who knows it in and out and can bring that to the defense.
See, I don't know. I don't know if they want to do that, because when you bring in a defensive line class like that, 3-4 isn't the most ideal situation for these guys.
But yeah.
The guys that they already have, I think that why change something? Myers had except for 1 year in 2007, he's had a pretty solid defense every year. And they've always run the 4-3, so why not stick with it?
They have a lot of good defensive linemen and
why
not a
change
lot of
it?
Linebackers.
Yeah.
One of the things is that a lot of those defensive linemen can fit in at the 3-4. Because Ronald Powell, like we said already, he can easily move to outside linebacker in that 3-4. Dominic Easley would make a really good defensive end in that. Sharif Floyd fits in perfectly into that nose guard spot. So those are the big three in that class. And they'd fit in nicely into those 3-4 positions. And you can really easily go from being in a 4-3 to having Ronald Powell stand up, drop back, switch the formation from play to play and not ever have to sub anyone off. So I think it's just something that they would like to have as the option, and that's kind of what I think he was most excited about, George Edwards, is that he was able to bring that. Like, they obviously weren't going to run exclusive 3-4, and I'm not saying that they're going to next year, but I think they would like that as an option so that they can, at any point in time, show a completely different look to the offense, and it immediately throws that offensive line, throws the quarterback off a little bit of to where this guy's going to be.
Yeah, well, one of Edwards' titles while he was coaching at Florida was inside linebackers coach. So that tells you a lot about how much they're planning on using the 3-4, because otherwise you're the inside linebacker coach.
Just him and Bostic a lot.
So,
Brendan Beal kind of limping around somewhere. Holding his elbow, maybe.
His neck.
It'll be interesting to see how this works out. It's going to be an interesting spring. The players in the signing class who are going to be on campus for spring football, Trey Burton, the quarterback, we talked about him, Gerald Christian at tight end, Robert Clark, who's an athlete. Niran Ball, defensive end, Matt Elam, Jordan Hayden, Leon Orr, Solomon Patton, Josh Shaw, Ian Silverman, we didn't talk about him, he's a big tackle from Jacksonville area, and then Jalen Watkins, who is a defensive back.
I like the people that said athlete, because they're like the top ones who are just so good that you can play them almost anywhere and they're going to be successful. And then there's the ones like Robert Clark, like, well, he's good. I don't really know where he's going to play in college.
I think he's going to be a return man.
Return?
I think they're going to put him in the offense. I don't see him playing corner.
But
he was definitely recruited by Zach Azani late and obviously Billy Gonzalez before he left. I think they keep him at a wide receiver. He's just too good. In an offense to keep him on defense. And I think he's going to be a return guy.
I just like those later athletes that are kind of like, he'll play somewhere. We'll see.
Really,
we don't know. Who knows? He'll find something, I'm sure.
One guy we haven't talked about, Jonathan Dowling, who only ESPN got it right with him. He's one of the best players I've seen since the summer. He was great at safety. He was great at corner, and he was great at receiver. He could really play any of those positions. Maybe not corner so much, but definitely safety and wide receiver. And
he brings something.
He said
that
he'll play either one, whichever one he gets on the field.
They really haven't brought in a really tall safety in a while. I mean, Will Hill's probably the tallest at, 6'1".
Yeah.
So he's going to bring height to the secondary if he plays there, something they really haven't had, which is always useful to have a tall safety, obviously.
I love tall defensive backs.
Of course.
All right, how tall is Josh Shaw? It says 6'1 on Rivals, but then 6'3 on the Florida.
Well, he's much taller than me, and I'm 5'8", 5'9". So I think he's around 6'2". Let's go through the middle. 6'1", 6'3", 6'2".
I like it.
I mean, either way, once again, that's taller than what they've got right now.
He's got better hands than a lot than certain Florida
receivers.
We'll name names.
Watching him on film, it was really impressive that the interceptions he was making. He was just stealing the ball away from the wide receiver.
And he's a smart kid. He's an affluent kid, and he knows defenses. He and I talked one day on the phone just randomly about what defense he would like to play in, and he was telling me stuff I didn't even know.
Shaw? Dowling?
Dowling.
Okay. So Dowling's like the wizard. He's got the encyclopedic brain.
He could probably be the David Nelson on defense, but...
The Ryan Stamper?
Yeah. All right, there you go. He'll be Ryan Stamper.
You always want to be the next Ryan Stamper.
Yeah.
All right, so let's wrap this show up with our weekly awards, the Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week. We're going to start with our Kyles, and I guess I'll go ahead and start with mine, even though this sort of is story time, and we probably should have gotten the other stuff out of the way first. I was trying to go to the Florida-Tennessee game last weekend. I've gone to every game. I will go to every game because that's the beat I cover. U.S. Airways decided that just wasn't going to happen for me, and it's a story that doesn't – this podcast can't contain that story, but let's just say that U.S. Airways screwed me over many times and did everything they could to keep me from getting to Tennessee. I did, in fact, not get to Tennessee – so my dream of covering every game was ruined, dashed, as that flight left the airport with me standing at the gate.
Crying.
Angry.
Sobbing,
angry and confused.
For those of you at home, there's a plaque on the wall in our sports office from Brian App, who covered the basketball team. I think
it's not really a plaque. It's just a sheet of paper.
It's laminated, which is pretty,
exactly.
Pretty
that's,
serious.
That's legitimate.
I believe he did it himself. So awarding himself the title for covering every single men's basketball game in a season, including a trip to Starkville, Mississippi. Adam set his sights on that. He drove to Arkansas.
Yeah, he topped it. He went to Fayetteville.
Yeah, which is pretty impressive. And then
alone
hit the snag thanks to snow.
No, it wasn't snow. It was U.S. Airways being irresponsible and lazy.
That's true. But
for the full story, check out Friday's podcast.
If snow never happened, you would have.
I would have driven. Yeah, no weather related cancellations though. All just their malfunctions and their mistakes. And I hate you, U.S. Airways. So there you go. That's my Kyle.
That's going to be the asterisk on your laminated plaque.
Do I still get a laminated plaque?
I don't know. We'll talk about it.
Yeah. Okay. We'll have an end of the year meeting about what everyone deserves, and I'll see if you deserve that.
It's going to be most people fired, most people promoted, and then me. Like, we talk about a plaque. That's great.
My Kyle is going to Merrill Hodge for not using his head. the ESPN analyst playing in some kind of celebrity,
flag football game.
Yeah, it was televised on Spike. So when he went to pull his flag, they got his shorts, pulled his shorts down halfway, and he's wearing a sporting a thong under there. If you work at ESPN, with all the allegations that came out, all the sexual stuff recently, you can't let this happen. You can't wear a thong when you're going to be playing on national TV. Hey, why are you wearing a thong?
Well, that's a fair question.
I guess that's the main issue that I would have here. But at the same time, if you just like wearing thongs that much, I don't know, wear something else over it. If you know you're going to be playing on TV.
People
are going
to be wear some compression shorts. I don't know.
People are going to be pulling at your shorts all day. And who wants to wear a thong in the sand?
Gets everywhere.
A lot of potential for bad stuff to happen. So that's my Kyle Jackson.
All right, Ed, you got a Kyle?
My Kyle was going to be George Edwards until I started thinking about things I actually cared about. And I'm going to go camera crew at the Super Bowl. Okay, so apparently 2.5 was the over-under on how many times I was going to get to see Kim Kardashian. I didn't get to see her at all. No shots of Kim Kardashian. I'm not happy with that at all. Reggie Bush had like 12 yards. That's like seven shots of her at least. That's all he really does. So, Super Bowl camera crew, pretty awful. CBS, multiple people should have been fired for not getting to see Kim Kardashian in some form or fashion throughout the entire Super Bowl. Yeah. No commercials, nothing.
Yeah. I'm also upset with the camera crew. One of my $1 prop bets was that Drew Brees would cry during the post-game ceremonies and the whole activities. And at one point, he was holding his baby. His eyes were watering. He was ready to cry. And it goes to commercial. Comes back. He's accepting the trophy. There's clearly tear marks down his eyes, but no more tears. So we had to call it a push. They couldn't just show the man crying. It's all because of Tebow and the backlash because of them showing him crying. But obviously, my actual Kyle is going to go to the Tebow commercial. Mainly because, one, the commercial sucked. And it was dumb. And two, because of all of the weeks leading up of the hype of how controversial it was going to be.
Why are you yelling at us, Bob?
Because I'm yelling at the people.
I'm sorry. I don't know what I did, but
all
I'm sorry.
The weeks leading up, how controversial it was and how people wanted it pulled. And the most controversial thing he did was tackle his mother.
She took like a chance.
Yeah, she did. She popped right back up. And then said at the end that he's not as tough as her, which is kind of, I don't know if it was a shot at him or just, you know, praising herself. But either way, yeah, that just did not live up to the hype. I was very, very upset about it.
Sure. I mean, clearly, very upset about it.
I wanted them to paint their face and start yelling about baby
fingers. That's how people built it up, is that he was going to say abortion is awful, don't ever do it, gays, you suck. That's how it was built up.
Jesus.
And he didn't say any of it. It was very upsetting. We were going to get to see what the real Tim Tebow was like, and we didn't get it.
We do. We're going to get Bobby up there soon. I'm going to go ahead and give out my Reggie. This is a little off the map. I'm going to give mine to the Alabama Basketball Media Guide. Mike, you and I went to the Alabama-Florida game in Tuscaloosa earlier this week, and we're going to the media room to pick up some pregame notes and everything, and then we see this Alabama Media Guide with head coach Anthony Grant, former Florida assistant, on it. And it's the greatest thing ever. If I were a head coach, that's what I would want to be portrayed as. It's just like the ultimate, like, I'm going to say it, badass on his media guide. It's just him sitting in a folding chair, leaning forward with two players behind him. You can't see much past like their chest, belly button area. They just look so intimidating.
You should have stopped before that. Yeah.
Their belly button, their navel area, I don't know.
Look, basically, it's Anthony Grant
it's
in
awesome.
A suit looking hard.
Yeah.
With, like, great lighting and, like, Photoshop skills, and then two guys behind him that have his back,
clearly.
Right. This is Anthony Grant's team. Like, don't screw with Alabama.
Yeah. And the whole media guide's awesome, too. It's all done in that style. Like, all the pictures are very, very dramatic.
I highly recommend you go to the Alligator Sports Twitter, scroll down through all my insane basketball tweeting from the game, and then find the TwitPic link. And look at this, because
it's awesome.
The Grant's doing well for himself now.
Yeah.
All right, well, my Reggie is also going to be from the Super Bowl. I loved all the slow motion replays. It was awesome.
Oh, man.
It was like when you watch those NFL film segments on Super Bowls, and it makes it look so much bigger and better than it was on TV for you. It's because of all those slow mo, like, awesome angles they get where you can see the impact. You can see what these guys are really going through out there. I thought CBS did a great job last night of hitting us with a lot of those. And I'm all in favor of that, especially in HD. It was wonderful. So more of that, please.
The best one was of the 2-point conversion, where they were able to. At first, it was short and complete, and then they reviewed it, and immediately as soon as they showed that replay, I mean, I kind of thought it was a catch it initially. Then after that, like it was like perfect angle, and it was one of those things. Where is that every time that there needs to be a challenge? Where is that camera?
Right.
And apparently, they only break it out for the Super Bowl. They might want to consider taking that out more often.
Secondary Reggie goes to the city of Portland, who just approved the stadium expansion plan for where the Portland Timbers MLS franchise will play. So
Seattle's going to have a big rival.
It's actually Steve Nash is coming in with the Vancouver franchise. So it's Vancouver, Portland, Seattle. Yeah. It's an old NASL rivalry getting back to the glory
days. People who have no clue what that means, can you explain the abbreviation that you just said?
Google it.
I won't.
Leave them wanting more. Always leave them wanting more. Ed, you got a Reggie?
I can't really think of anything all that great.
Portland?
But, you know what? I'm going to go with, I could go with myself. I was thinking about that. I did get all five of my predictions on my blog right about National Signing Day.
Nice.
And I'd like to toot my own horn on that. And I'd like to say that last night I won our Super Bowl pool, $30 richer with the little prop bets. So, I mean, I don't want to gloat, but I wasn't prepared for this. Huh. So that was kind of fun.
So you can
winning at things is fun. Yeah. So.
All right, Bobby.
My Reggie, as much as I don't want to give it to him, my Reggie is going to go to Urban Meyer. I hate saying anything good about the man, but he did an amazing job with this recruiting class. And somehow, I don't know how he did it, but somehow he salvaged it. Despite, you know, the whole, I'm retiring, I'm taking a leave of absence, I don't know what I'm doing. Steve Adazio is taking over the team. The team was doomed. There was no way they can bring in anybody. And that's actually when they did the best recruiting. That's when they got all the big names. So, great job. You'll rarely hear me saying that, though, Urban. I know you listen.
I'm pretty sure you do.
Why don't you talk about the transfers that you think are
going to
happen? All right. We've already gone over
that. Yeah. That wraps it up for this show. Ed, thanks for coming on. Thanks for coming on the podcast. Where can people find you online?
Gainesville Sun. You can find me in the paper, or you can go to gatorsports.com. My recruiting blog is called The Scout Leader. I did not name it that.
Sure you did.
You wanted to ask your ass off, right?
Yeah, weekly mailbag for recruiting questions. You can send them to me online. Just all you have to do is go on the message boards, or you can write comments on my blogs. I got a great blog comment this week. I'd like to shout that out. Let me look at this one on my phone.
This could have been your Kyle.
This really could have been. It's from Lamar. So, Lamar, if you're listening.
Lamar Odom. He's angry about the
Lamar ripped
thing.
Me because one of my superlatives that I gave out last week was that Cody Riggs was overrated. And again, like I said on this, it's not that I don't think he's good or will be good. But in a class like this, you have to find someone that maybe was rated a little too high. And I said him because of his height, not because of his athletic ability. So you should probably go back and read that over, Lamar, and hit me up. You know where to find me.
Get him.
Yeah.
And for all the people who do follow Ed, he's going to really appreciate this. Remember, the 2011 class is starting now, so ready.
Yeah.
Right. Where can they find you on Twitter? I believe twitter.com/...
It's GSun Recruiting, capital G, capital S, capital R. So 460 something followers. I want 500 by the end of the day.
Yeah, I think this podcast can do it for you. So if we can't get 40 people to listen to this and go follow you on Twitter, we're not doing our job right. We'll be back later in the week with another podcast. Send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org. Thanks for listening.
End the show, Barry.